This is the best of two pros and a cup of Joe with LeVar Arrington, Brady Quinn, and Jonas Knox on Fox Sports Radio.
LeVar Arrington, we are in the vicinity of greatness here, because uh-oh. It's one thing to be a TV star. It's another thing to be a radio star. Mm. And then it's a whole nother thing to have an entire Thursday night football game centered around you. The Brady Quinn Bowl went off as planned last night. Yeah, we had his former team, the Browns, his former team, the Broncos. I loved every second of it.
He
congratulations,
called money too.
Brady.
You called yeah. money, too, bro.
It's
by
so
the way.
Good. So good.
I don't know what was called there. I mean, at least the Browns got the win this time. Yeah. You know, when I started against the Broncos, we blew a fourth quarter lead. Jay Cutler ended up bringing the Broncos back, so didn't work out quite the same. One of our cornerbacks Olay Daniel Graham up the sideline for a touchdown. Yeah, let's just call it what it is. That was one of those tough Monday morning meetings. You know, LeVar, when everyone gets in the room, you put on a few plays. That was one that got put up there, paused, and talked about for at least a minute or so. It was not fun to be a part of.
I'll say this. We talked about I will take credit for saying this is a run-first team. They are a run-heavy team, and that's when you're going to get your best from Baker Mayfield. That was put on the table. But you, my friend, talked about the young running backs and D'Ernest Johnson being one of the names that you brought up, and you were spot on. You said the kids can run, and they came out there, and that's exactly what they did. And give credit to the Browns offensive front, right? I mean, Von Miller, if your game rang as loud as the pre leading up to the game words and antics, maybe the results would have been different. But you do realize he got blanked. He got one tackle, one assist, but was blanked in the tackles for losses, was blanked in the I'm going to kill your quarterback, I don't know who's in front of me deal, but I'm going to kill him and kill that person, zero sacks. So I don't know what that means. You know, maybe we don't want to get used to our greats being smokescreen, smokescreen players. But golly, if you're going to tell the world you're about to kill the guy in front of you, don't need to know his name, I'm going to kill the quarterback, and you go do nothing. That's I don't know, Brady. I don't know, Jonah.
Can I ask this question?
I don't know. Yeah.
Is it starting to be the end here? Is it just dropping off for him right now? Because, he hasn't been able to stay healthy. And now you get these moments where, you know, Jedrick Wills obviously was back, you know, starting last night, ended up playing. Didn't necessarily know what the status could have been for him. Conklin was out at right tackle. It ended up being Hance. Mm-hmm. Blake Hance, who's been like their swing tackle for them. And to your point, like, he still couldn't get it done. And I don't know. I mean, he's one of the all-time greats, in my opinion, as far as just how good he has been off the edge. But of late, it has not been the same.
Yeah. When you look at a guy like Von Miller, I always tell people what they don't realize is linebacker is like a running back's position. Your shelf life, depending on where you're at in the game, your shelf life is very, very short. You're basically a more physical position than the running back's position. Like, if you think about it, running backs get what on average, if you're talking about a high volume, you're just around the 20, just over 20 mark, you know, 22, 23. Linebackers are getting hit every single run play. Linebackers are sometimes getting hit on pass plays because they're pass rushing. So when you talk about the wear and tear that takes place on a linebacker's body and the things they have to do, because they have to be able to do what everybody on the field has to be able to do. They have to be able to play the pass like a safety, sometimes like a corner, depending on the coverage and who the coverage is on. You got to play like a defensive end. Sometimes you got to play like a defensive tackle. Well, how is that? Because when those offensive guards or that interior lineman, that center comes off of the ball, and for some reason they decide to go past the defensive tackle or the three technique, the zero technique, and climb to the linebacker, that same type of contact that those interior linemen are getting on the defensive line, those linebackers are getting. You know, so when you talk about guys that do what Von Miller does, which is more of a if we're going to be honest, he's more of a glorified stand-up defensive end than he is a linebacker. But with that being said, he's getting contact constantly, and his body has began to – I mean, that's just the law, the jungle. His body has been beat up and has been worn down, and he has had some serious injuries that have been connected to what he's got going on. I mean, it derailed my career. You know what I mean? So in the end, if this was it, which he didn't look great. I'm not going to close the door on him yet, Brady, but I certainly wouldn't be telling people that I'm about to go in here and assassinate them like Shinobi.
The good thing is there. Look, Von Miller. The good thing is he did not kill anyone. He's not like Alec Baldwin.
No one
for
died.
Those of you waking up this morning who may or may not have accidentally shot someone on a set somewhere in New Mexico.
Well, there's that. As we take a
I'm telling you what the news is this morning. I'm sorry,
it is a tragedy. Very bizarre story there. Maybe we'll have more on that as the show progresses here on Fox Sports Radio.
Don't shoot the messenger.
Do you think Baker Mayfield felt at all insecure watching Case
Absolutely.
Keenum wheel and deal last
Absolutely.
Night? I mean, Brady, up and down the field. Case Keenum, I got to be honest with you, he's starting to make a push for MVP. Based on what we saw last night,
smokes.
I'm telling you right now, Baker Mayfield's got to be feeling
dude?
The heat.
Carried
Listen, I told you, man.
There's some truth to what you're saying in regards to you watch Case Keenum go in there. The way they run the football, which they did very well last night, they're balanced. And then you watch what he does in the pass game, you kind of say, yeah, this is one of those maybe he's making a case for someone else to be able to go in and do the same thing. Hmm. I mean, in all honesty, it's not to take a knock at Baker Mayfield, but you kind of take for granted how good this offensive line is, the play calling of Kevin Stefanski, the ground attack, and then obviously the talent of wide receiver. I mean, Odell Beckham and Jarvis Landry and all the other weapons that they've got, you kind of take for granted that. And then you see someone else come in and do it, and you go, maybe being quarterback in this offense is, I'm not going to say easy. Playing quarterback in the NFL is nowhere easy, but it's definitely a good position to be in. And I think any quarterback that's coming from another team would love to be in that, love to have that opportunity. So I do think the longer this goes on, if Case Keenum plays well, and if Baker stays out, it's not gonna do Baker Mayfield any justice in trying to make a case for why he should get an extension. That's for sure.
I don't see how they can, with the way that he's the way the organization is now. I don't see how you just walk away from finally having some success. You got a guy, whatever you think of Baker Mayfield, he's been there from the beginning with this turnaround, them being a playoff team. I know he's banged up right now, the shoulder injury, now it's a fracture, all the stuff that came out from Jay Glazer last night. I just don't know that they're the organization that's in a spot to where they can just turn down success that they now have just to kind of, well, we'll roll the dice again and see if we can find somebody else. I don't know if they're in their spot to do it.
But
I really don't.
It's leverage, though. It's bargaining leverage, and there's the idea, and again, I will always reference Dak Prescott and the Dallas Cowboys situation, but with that being said, that is a very different owner, that is a very different market, and that is a very different approach to how you compensate your players. I'll start there, but with that being said, Dak missed all of last season pretty much, and maybe the difference here is if Case Keenum does play well, it creates a difference in terms of how you're measuring it and how you're weighing it, because Andy Dalton didn't play well in Dallas. You did see the impact and the effect and the drop-off of what Dallas was able to do when Dak Prescott left the lineup.
Do you think if Andy Dalton had played well, do you guys think if Dalton goes in there and plays well, say they don't make the playoffs, but they win some games and he plays well, do you think they really turned their back on Dak Prescott? I didn't think there was a shot in hell they weren't giving him a contract extension. Honestly.
No, but I also think that's because Dak was this progression of continuing to build every year. Like, if you look at him, he got better and better and better every single year, like he was going up a set of stairs. Baker, it's been kind of a roller coaster. It was a offensive rookie of the year first year. It's a down second year. It's a great third year. It's this year you're saying, all right, he's kind of back down, not performing up to the magnitude we thought he would. So that's the tough part. You want consistency. Like, one of the funniest stats that came out was, I think if you look at, like, Tom Brady's, you know, first, what, 100 and however many starts versus, like, you know, his last 130 starts, whatever the case is, or 50 starts, whatever it is, and you look at his win-loss record, it's almost identical. He's just as consistent and as steady as can be, and that's unfortunately not necessarily what Baker's been. And I think that's the tough part is if you want consistency, you want that steady hand, you want, in a way, predictability, knowing what you're going to get from your quarterback every week. I think that's sometimes hard to anticipate with Baker. Year to year, week to week, as far as what his performance is going to be like. And this year, you know, maybe a lot of it's had to do with the injury to the shoulder, and only he knows how bad it is, right? He played for it or with it to a degree, and now he's saying, like, it might be too much. So that's the tough part is, you know, it's hard to judge what they're thinking internally. Albert Breer told us that, hey, look, they're comfortable with signing to him a long-term deal, but they want to be patient to wait this thing out because, to his point, you know, Russell Wilson may be looking elsewhere. You know, you might find other quarterbacks who are looking elsewhere after this year that maybe Cleveland looks like a good destination for him. So what? I wouldn't rush to do a second contract. I'd be patient about all this.
Mm.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to watch how this whole thing plays out when it comes to Baker Mayfield and the contract and all the other fun stuff that comes along with these discussions. By the way, if you thought the Dak Prescott conversation about whether or not he deserved a contract was going to heat up and start gassing people up, what do you think the Baker Mayfield discussion is going to be like? That'll carry us at least two off seasons if we're betting on it.
Be sure to catch live editions of Two Pros and a Cup of Joe with Brady Quinn, LeVar Arrington, and Jonas Knox weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
So how nasty is this Washington football team scandal going to get? LeVar Arrington, how nasty is this email gate going to get now that we've got Congress involved who has said they'd like to take a look at this and they'd like to have a conversation about it? It feels like we got people in high places trying to pull some strings to get to the truth of what's happening there with the Washington football team.
Well, it's the nation's capital. And one thing that you learn when you go there is the football team is just as much connected to how the politics are handled there. And so it's a microcosm in a lot of ways to what you see take place in the nation's capital. I mean, you think about it. Since going pro, I've met every single president, every one, from George W. to Joe Biden. So the football team is very connected to the political landscape of the DMV, which is, if you know about the DMV, they call it district, Maryland and Virginia, because they're all circling and touching and surrounding. This is going to not end well for the simple fact that the premise of what they're doing in this request is based upon how the workplace is being managed. So this is a much, if I'm reading this correctly, this is a much bigger situation that could ensue if the government feels as though they have to get involved with how bad that workplace is. And if that is the case, then that now becomes an issue that the NFL has to be able to address, which, if you're looking at the larger conversation, then that becomes an issue that all the owners have to be a part of addressing. You know, it's interesting, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think a franchise has ever been taken away from, and I think we talked about this on the show, I don't think a franchise has ever been taken away from an owner in the National Football League. And if that's the case, if you find yourself in a situation where he has to be a sacrificial lamb for all of this, then what does that mean for the rest of the National Football League ownership and how things are done? Because you'd have to assume people are already showing how petty they are, how much pettier is it going to get, Brady? How much is going to start to come out about other situations if the domino falls the way it might fall with what's taking place in Washington?
Well, it's one of the reasons, though, where I don't think it'll get to that point. I mean, here's what I hate about this. Anytime politicians get involved, okay, is they do it for their own grandstanding.
Yes.
This isn't about the Washington football team and that, or it's always about the politicians at hand. It's about them trying to do something that's going to help them get reelected. Look, they've got way more important things to do than to look into the culture of the Washington football team. There's a bajillion other things they could be doing right now besides that. Mm-hmm. But that's what politicians do. They stick their face, they stick their nose in things they don't, you know, really know about, and they try to bring things to light. And so, you know, that process may happen. But the reality is what you're going to get is 31 other teams doing their best to posture and not, you know, allow this to get too far, because they don't want any other politicians or anyone else looking at all the stuff that they've got going on inside their house.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where the resistance, I think, is going to come. That's where I don't think you're ever going to get, you know, a team being taken away from an owner. I think they would force you to sell. That's one thing. They're not going to just take it away.
Because
it doesn't work like that.
Because
that was
Jerry Richardson. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
Like, they didn't take it away from them. They forced them to sell it. That's how this would go if it happens. I always hate when politicians get involved. I'm sorry. Like, to me, it never makes anything better, right? Like, hi, I'm here from the government. I'm here to help. That never helps anything, all right? Well, so this is something that I think, whether, you know, if this is the step they need to go through to change up the culture there in Washington, it's so be it. I personally feel like it should be incumbent upon the other 31 teams to want to get it out there, to want to clean things up there. Right, they should be able to handle their own instead of involving politicians that are paid by taxpayer dollars that should be going for, I don't know, maybe things like running our country instead of looking at the Washington football team.
Yeah, there's not a COVID crisis still going on or anything like that. Well, yeah, there's nothing going on there, nothing to see.
There's always agendas, though, you know, and that's the thing about it with politicians. Agendas drive politics. And one thing that I learned about, you know, in terms of rules of engagement and how things take place in the district, is it's all based upon relationships. So what this makes me feel like is what's the agenda and what's the relationship? Who's talking to the person that made this a priority to investigate? What is the connection to others with the people that are spearheading this? Because if you think about it, everybody knows. I mean, we talked about it. A lot of people are going to talk about it. Everybody knows that there's more in those emails than what we saw. Everybody knows that those emails were
leaked.
Wait,
are you telling me, LeVar, it wasn't just John Gruden? Is that what you're trying to tell me?
You know what, Brady? You know what, Brady? I'm going to close my eyes. I'm going to take a shot at this, and I'm going to say, I think there's more to it than what we saw that was put out there about John Gruden. So
I call that the turkey hole.
Come on, coach.
Oh, there you go.
Jeez.
Hey, and you know what? He's going to be looking right down it when all of this stuff starts to come out.
Turkey hole?
Yeah, he's going to be looking. He's going to be staring that thing right down the center. Like, there it is right there.
LeVar, I'm not asking you to out anybody. All right, that's the last thing I don't want you. I don't want to put people in a bad spot.
I don't have
there,
a problem right? doing but, it, though. So okay. If I have it, I'm going to give it to you.
I have no cut
cards with these people there.
Here's what I want to know. Do you believe, and by believe, maybe have you seen some things that would lead you to believe from your time in Washington that if this investigation goes through because Congress and politicians are getting involved, that maybe some politicians in the D.C. area might also get a little bit nervous because they might have some involvement in some scandalous activities involving old Danny Snyder and company there with the Washington football team?
Danny. That's a great point. It's a great setup. And here's the thing.
There's a lot of people that are implicated in this.
The agenda could be to implicate other politicians. It could be the people that are doing this right now are implicating other people that have been involved with. I mean, that would not be a far-fetched agenda, because if the politicians are getting involved, there's a couple different things. It's either they can benefit from who's going to come in and take over the franchise, right? You think about it that way.
Yes.
Or you could look at it from the standpoint of you can put yourself, as Brady was mentioning, they're trying to put themselves in position to be endearing to their communities, to garner the support, to get votes, to stay in office. So if you can get somebody up out of there by doing something like, say, let's investigate this further, and you're thinking that the turkey hole is Dan Snyder and John Gruden and Bruce Allen, but really it's politician A, B, and C over here that are a part of those emails, and they're a part of inappropriate content and context, then Jonas, what? I wouldn't say that's far-fetched at all, to be honest.
All right, so we talked about the Washington football team stuff, and now you got Congress involved, politicians are getting involved. Here's the name to watch in all of this.
Yeah.
Old astronaut boy, Jeff Bezos.
Bezos.
Because Jeff Bezos reportedly wants to own an NFL team and wants the Washington football team. He owns the Washington Post.
Yeah,
you know, he's got the money to pull some strings. Maybe Jeff Bezos is behind
he's
some of the stuff that is going on.
A gigantic rocket that looks like, well,
Bills.
Yes.
The Bills
mascot.
Bills mascot.
There we go.
They're unofficial mascot.
There we go.
Yes.
Oh,
yeah.
Boy.
Just
flying around in a gigantic rocket.
Yeah.
We're going
on a trip in a little rocket ship.
Intentional. Bezos' design.
Yeah, man.
Bezos' design of that rocket, if you want to call it that, that was intentional, right? Had to be.
It had to have been.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just want to make sure.
It had to have been.
It's just very.
I mean, think about how you'd ask someone that you're interested in, right? Because he's single now, or maybe he's dating someone now. Or
isn't he?
He's divorced, but
he's dating a former sports reporter. Hmm. I thought he got remarried from L.A. I think an L.A. sports reporter. I think Eddie Garcia is familiar with the L.A. sports reporter that Bezos is dating. Eddie, you know her, right?
Lauren Sanchez. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. How do you think?
I think she had the child of Tony Gonzalez, I believe.
Oh, wow.
Oh, okay. She was Scott Erickson also, pitcher?
Probably.
Oh, wow. What are you getting at?
Okay. What are you guys talking about?
Well, she reports sports.
Now, listen.
You know, can I ask this, though? Rocket impressive, though? Like, if you're Bezos, do you, like, hey, I've got a rocket, by the way.
You want to get in it?
Yeah.
You want to ride?
You want to ride?
Yeah. You want to ride the rocket? Hey, so anyway, so one interesting thing to think about.
Space. Yeah, I will.
we'll orbit.
With my rocket.
We will see the moon in a way that you've never seen it before.
Let's just hope the rocket doesn't explode,
all right? let's just be careful.
We have ignition. Anyway. You know, the guy who currently owns the team did it the same exact way, in the sense that he had a publication. You know, he did it through media. So it's interesting that he owns, you know, the Washington Post, because that is the most, I would say, the most respected and the best newspaper source, you know, and saying newspaper sounds old, but that is the best print, you know, news outlet in the district. So to look at it from the perspective of, man, he's controlling the media in the market, that says a lot, because it's very difficult to control narratives anymore in today's, you know, culture, today's society, especially in sports, because of how influential the influencers of these sports can go into the social media realm and put their own messaging and branding out there. So to see someone as forward and progressive now as Bezos is, versus that's how we looked at Daniel Snyder when he took over the Washington, known then, you know, obviously the R skin. So at the end of the day,
what do you mean by that when you say
the
R skins?
The Redskins. I played for the Redskins.
Okay. I mean, was curious.
So some people may get offended that I said it.
Roberto.
I may get an email today saying that I can't say the name of the team that I played for pretty much my entire pro career, but that's the team I played for. That's on all my photos and, you know, all that good stuff. But anyway, the point of the matter is that was exactly how Dan Snyder found himself in the crosshairs of being able to get a hold of this team. And there was some pretty shady action that took place, if you guys remember, with Cook's son. And there were a lot of conversations as to how Dan Snyder was able to get the team from underneath the Cook family. So there's that, and people may not bring that up or talk about that because we love staying in the recent effect because people are part-timers. They don't really look at the entire picture of things. But I don't want to attack anybody. What I'm saying is what's good for the goose sometimes is good for the gander as well, meaning – Dan Snyder did some wild S to get that team in the first place. He leveraged media. He leveraged having that influence. And who's to say that Jeff Bezos or someone else might be doing the same thing to him right now?
Yeah. It's, listen, if you want to own an NFL team, you got to pull some strings, man. There's only 32 of these.
Well, weren't the minority owners of that team trying to push, they were trying to get him out. Then they were trying to be bought out. I mean, there was all that kind of back and forth.
They tried to get him out. Once they realized they couldn't get him out, then they were like, okay, buy us out. But they were trying to get his ass up out of there.
I'll say this. I mean, there's probably not a better time to sell. Mm. I mean, if we're being real,
yeah,
the NFL is as healthy as it's going to be. You've got a TV contract that's still got 10 years left on it. A CBA as well. That's got 10 years left. I mean, everything's copacetic right now. Like, if you're an NFL owner, now is the time if you wanted to sell. I mean, you're going to be able to make billions. That's what these franchises are going for right now. So I'm not saying it's going to happen because I don't think he wants to get rid of the team. But if they did force him to, man. That's a great windfall to be a part of, right? It's a great problem to have if he was forced to sell.
Could you imagine if we owned all of us owned an NFL team together? Can you imagine?
I would
that?
Sleep. Like, I would make a. I would literally like Stan Kroenke. Okay, Stan Kroenke, I believe this is true, has a private condo, like in the arena where the Colorado Avalanche play because like Nuggets and Avalanche play in the same spot.
Great.
He's got like a condo there. I'm sure he does too in the new stadium in LA, but that's where he like stays. Like I would 100% do that. I think it's a dope move.
Be sure to catch live editions of Two Pros and a Cup of Joe with Brady Quinn, LeVar Arrington, and Jonas Knox weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.
Hey, I'm Doug Gottlieb. The podcast is called All Ball. We usually talk all basketball all the time, but it's more about the stories about what made these people love their sport and all the interesting interactions along the way. We talk to coaches. We talk to players. We tell you stories. You download it. You listen to it. I think you'll like it. Listen to All Ball with Doug Gottlieb on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Listen, there are some people out there that like them some Dr. Dre. There are some people out there that like them some Dr. J. There are even some people out there that like the song Dr. Feel Good. Mm. But on this show, we like Dr. David Chow. That is right. Mm. He is the pro football doc. He is in the house. Doctor, we appreciate you. Thanks for getting up early and hanging out with a couple of slappies here on Sports Talk Radio.
Well, that's quite the intro. The check is in the mail. Thank you.
See, that's how it's done. That's how it's done. So, Dr. Chow, I got to ask you right off the top, what the hell's the Baker Mayfield injury? Because we heard the shoulder, and then we heard an update. Now there's a break. Can you explain for us morons listening who aren't able to comprehend what's happening with his shoulder?
No, I get exactly what you're saying. How is it possible that the report is that he has a broken humerus and he needs it to heal to play, but he plans on playing October 31st versus the Steelers in like 10 days? How is that even feasible? Well, here's how. When he dislocated his shoulder in week two, he did it the first time. And if you go to my Twitter timeline, I put up some video on it, et cetera, explaining it. And he dislocates his shoulder trying to make a tackle after the interception. But he comes right back into the game in the second half and actually plays very well. 10 for 10, 102 yards, one passing touchdown, one rushing touchdown.
Oh, wow.
with a harness. And no one really even noticed because he played fine week three. Then all of a sudden week four, he doesn't play as well. And all of a sudden it's always the shoulder to the shoulder. But in week six, he dislocates it in a little different way. And we show that on the video. And it stays out. And it's a, quote, more severe dislocation where there's more labral tear. And when this happens, you often get what's called a Hill-Sachs lesion. Not trying to be too medical on you. But when the ball of the shoulder joint comes out of the socket and stays out traumatically, it can have a small indentation on the back of the humerus or backslash top because it came out the front and down on Baker. And that's the, quote, fracture that they're talking about. It is a legitimate fracture. But look, if it were an unstable fracture or something like that, how would he return to play for two series in week six? He didn't play great, but he did return to play and throw the ball for two series on Sunday. And now with the soreness and swelling and additional tear, he misses Thursday. But I do think it's feasible and reasonable that he plays the next game in 10 days. And that's how a fracture can, quote, be played through, because it's not structural and it's not unstable. Sure, it's very painful and swollen, but that's kind of my take.
Doc, it's always good to talk with you. I got to ask you about Russell Wilson's, I guess it's his middle finger on his throwing hand. I know he's got a pin put in. I believe it's got like a splint or a cast or something on it. How fast, realistically, can he come back to play in your mind, given that they can't really afford to fall behind in the NFC West? It's competitive. But also being able to come back and then get to up to speed to be the same player that he was before the injury.
Well, yeah, that big, huge splinter cast that he has on that we all saw is probably hiding a pin that's sticking through the skin at the tip. That's for the mallet finger. And, of course, the second injury was a little more proximal with the fracture, with the screws, et cetera. I said all along, once the specific nature of the two injuries were revealed, that week 10 was a reasonable target. Now, things have to break his way. It's not a guarantee. But week 10 was a reasonable target for the Seahawks and Russell Wilson. Now, my question back to you, Brady, as the quarterback expert, is how much do you as a quarterback, and does Russell Wilson, because I'm not familiar with the type of grip that he has on the football. Is he index finger dominant? Is he on the, which fingers on the laces, et cetera? I'm sure you would know that. If he doesn't have full ability to bend the tip of the finger, how effective can he be and how accurate can he be in week 10?
I think he's going to have a hard time, in particular throwing the ball down the field, which they like to do. And if there's any wind, I think he's going to have a hard time spinning it. I dealt with this on my right index finger. I had two pins put in, to be quite honest, my fingers never felt the same since. Just the sensation rolling off my index finger. So I just think it's going to take him some time, in my opinion, in getting that feel or back to, or maybe getting closer to a new normal for how that ball is going to feel coming off his finger. But it's going to take a while. I mean, I would say more than just week 10, maybe even the latter point of the season.
Gotcha. And it's interesting in that case, too. Russell Wilson returned to the game, threw a pass on first down, and tried to pass on third down and was sacked, but didn't. I mean, and then he left the game, and there was the extra fracture as well as the mallet finger.
Dr. Child, LeVar Arrington here, my first time talking and interacting with you. It's a pleasure to talk to you and get your knowledge and your takes. I want to go to Dak Prescott, and he's dealing with a calf strain now. It happened towards the end of the game, seemingly. From your perspective, I've been saying all along, once the body is out of balance from one injury, it tends to go to another place where you're overcompensating, and then you might have something that kind of develops there, and then something else develops there. I don't want to feel like I'm reading too much into anything that happens to Dak Prescott, but I feel like I'm going to read too much into anything that happens to Dak Prescott. What's your take on him? Should we look at this as just an isolated one time, it's a calf strain, or should we be looking at it as everything is connected to that catastrophic injury he had last year?
Well, you know, obviously in terms of underreaction or overreaction, the truth is always somewhere in the middle, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, in the NFL, never too high, never too low. And by the way, LeVar, I'll forgive you. There's no way that you can remember, but we've met and chatted before. You never put a name to a face, I'm sure. But,
okay.
Down to the Junior Seau fundraiser,
yes,
golf tournaments,
yes,
and other things.
Wow.
And I was on the board there. So,
oh,
so
wonderful.
Just a hello. But I'm sure when we cross paths.
I certainly don't remember a whole lot about the weekend. God bless Junior, because he made me – once I have a moment with a certain beverage, I generally don't go back. And Jameson, he destroyed me. With Jameson that weekend, so you'll have to accept my apologies that there, a lot of that was blurry that weekend for me.
No question. I wasn't giving you any grief about
all right,
it.
Okay.
All good. As long as your cup of Joe right now doesn't have Jameson.
Indeed.
In it,
no, right. I'm okay. I'm actually drinking ice water right now, so it's good.
So back to the initial question. Look, yes, compensation injuries are real, and injuries beget injuries. And at the beginning of the season, in the preseason, I was saying Dak will not be 100% at the start. And indeed, he tried to overdo it, and he got that shoulder muscle strain, the latissimus dorsi strain, that was said to be no big deal day-to-day, but he missed a lot of the preseason.
Mm-hmm.
At this point, though, I think that shoulder injury is behind him. That ankle fracture dislocation is essentially behind him. So I think this calf injury has very little to do with that. I think it's relatively mild, and I do think he will play after the bye, and I think he will be fine. However, calf injuries do tend to linger. I think he's going to be able to play well and throw, but he's probably going to be a little bit less mobile. A couple years ago, Aaron Rodgers in early December strained his calf. You remember that playoffs where he really didn't run the ball at all because it lingered all the way into January? He turned down chances. I'm not saying Dak is that severe, but certainly it will affect his mobility some going forward. But thankfully, the ankle fracture dislocation is better. The shoulder is better. So he's just dealing with the calf.
Okay.
Now, LeVar, if he was playing your position, I think he might miss time,
okay,
right? You can't do what you do with being a little less mobile. But as a quarterback, Dak with his calf strain is still going to be probably three times more mobile than, let's say, my buddy who just retired, Phillip Rivers.
Mm. Okay.
Dr. David Chow joining us here on Fox Sports Radio at ProFootballDoc on Twitter. It is Two Pros and a Cup of Joe here on FSR. LeVar Arrington, Brady Quinn, Jonas Knox with you here. I wanted to ask you about Joe Burrow. Now, the throat contusion or whatever the hell the injury is he's got to his throat to where, you know, he's giving himself voice rest, which to me just sounds like a cop-out. He doesn't want to do interviews during the week, but never mind all that. how impressed are you with how Joe Burrow has played coming off the devastating knee injury that he suffered last year?
I'm very impressed with how Joe Burrow has played because he's a young guy who, you know, also you have to think about rust, right, and rhythm. And he's overcome all of that. And at ProFootballDoc.com, we do something called an SIC or a six score about percentage of health. And he started out, I think, in probably low 60s in terms of his knee and overall potential production. But he's climbed into the near 90s now. He's done better every single week. And so kudos to him and how it is. And it's difficult, right, Brady? I mean, lead leg, you know, you can't be worried about your lead leg when you're looking downfield. You just have to play. And I think he's done it. But young guys got to, like, get down when it's 3rd and 12 and you're 6 yards away from a first down, right? I mean, you got to live to fight another day. But with that being said, I think his the throat rest thing, I think Marshawn Lynch is upset about that excuse that he didn't think of it.
That's a good point.
He should have. Hey, Doc, last one for me. Concussions right now, it's interesting because I watched Daniel Jones, I mean, literally almost get his head taken off couple weeks ago playing against the Cowboys. He's back the following week. I feel like there's been a number of times we've seen players suffer concussions, be out for the rest of that particular game, and then come back the following week. I feel like it didn't used to be like this. Usually there was maybe a couple weeks off or at least a week off following something like this. Has it changed in regards to how teams are handling concussions and putting players back out there?
Well, you have to remember every concussion evaluation and every return to play is supervised by the independent neuro guys, right, that are not affiliated with the team. And so the protocols haven't changed. But I've noticed that too, Brady. First of all, in Daniel Jones' case, it was the quarterback that initiated the contact, right? He was trying to score on the goal line. He turned up into the defender. So certainly legal play, nothing dirty there. But yes, Teddy Bridgewater the week before returned in 1 week, Daniel Jones. And, you know, statistically, I think it has shifted slightly. It used to be slightly more people missed the next week. Now I think it's slightly less. You know, the pool sample size is still small. But think about this. I remember a hit this last week that Justin Fields took. I don't know if you guys saw that. It was a pretty good hit there. And a couple years ago, social media, Twitter, whatever, would have been screaming he should be pulled out of the game and he should be checked. And, you know, I monitor it from the command center and we do all the stuff and didn't see anything. I think, and it's not that the rules have changed or whatever, but I think in some subtle ways, and this is not being critical in any way of anyone, but our attention this last year and a half has been on COVID rather than CTE. So, you know, people don't watch it as much, so to speak. Not that the doctors are skipping things or skipping steps, but just in terms of discussion points as well.
Dr. David Chow, get him on Twitter at Pro Football Doc. I'm sure you get inundated with fantasy football questions and everything else as people are getting ready for a busy weekend in the NFL. They want to know their favorite players, players on their fantasy teams are doing. He's a great follow on Twitter at Pro Football Doc. Doctor, we appreciate you. Thanks so much. Let's do it again soon.
Thanks, Doc.
Thanks. My pleasure, guys.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.